This is Fresh Air. I'm Frank Browning. 20 years ago, Lorene Carey came home from her job at Woolworths one Friday night and got a phone call that changed her life. A family friend told her that New England's super elite St. Paul's prep school was looking for black girls, and she should apply. A year later, she was enrolled. Lorene Carey has written about what St. Paul's did to her life and what she's done to St. Paul's in a new book called Black Ice. Welcome to Fresh Air, Lorene.
Thank you.
Well, there are a lot of these episodes in the book about what the expectations are, what the terminologies are, really coming to understand the world of rich white people. And those rich white people often sound very strange.
Oh, well, I hope not too strange. I hope that I haven't done a parody of people. The world seemed strange to me. The culture seemed strange in some ways. But in fact, as I say in the book, I was prepared for that's what I was raised for. I was raised to go to St. Paul's, even though I didn't know it, almost as much as the kids who were supposed to have gone there.
Tell me more about that. You were raised in a black middle-class family in Philadelphia.
Yes. We called it middle class, although I later learned that black middle class is sometimes different from standard white American middle class. But we thought it was middle class, and it was just fine.
Uh-huh. Well, what is that difference?
I think I've heard some people in the community say that middle class in black America is if you have a job. You know, you have a job and a home and you're doing okay. But there's a sense of vulnerability in the black middle class that I didn't notice among middle class white students that I met at St. Paul's and then folks I've met later.
You talk in the book about the first time you drove up to see the campus at St. Paul's with your family, your parents, your little sister. And a black teacher there was, I believe, describing, one of the teachers there was describing what life at St. Paul's had been like. And he spoke about tea dances. And I guess tea dances aren't there anymore now that it's a co-ed school. But the way you wrote about it was so remarkable. It really did seem as though you were almost a young anthropologist going out to describe the rituals of these peculiar people. I wonder if you could read from us just a paragraph or so.
Sure,
that time.
What was a tea dance, I wondered. Tea meant little girls with clean hands and faces, sipping out of china cups, eating butter cookies with raspberry jam. Teas belonged in church or in childhood. A dance, to the contrary, meant teenagers in a basement, black lights, red bulbs, music jamming its way through our shoes and up into our feet. It meant arms in the air, whistles, a soul train down the middle of the room, whipping out new steps, nice and casual, as if we hadn't spent all week practicing. It meant sweat steaming out of the tops of our heads, shrinking afros worthy of Angela Davis down to dreaded TWAs, teeny-weeny afros. A dance meant watching sharp so that no amorous brother spoiled our hot pants. Tea had nothing to do with it.
My guest is Lorene Carey. She's just finished a memoir of her transition from living in a black middle-class family in Philadelphia to the elite St. Paul's prep school. At another point, after you had gotten to St. Paul's, you were talking with friends there. You were trying to find your place and deal with why you had come. And you use a phrase called turnout.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And let me read a little passage back to you that fascinated me. You say, I had no idea that wealth and privilege could confer real advantages beyond the obvious ones sprawled before us. Instead, I believed that rich white people were like poodles, overbred, inbred, degenerate. All the coddling and permissiveness would have a bad effect, I figured, now that they were up against those of us who'd lived a real life in a real world. And this is about turning out, that you were going to turn out.
That's
or
right.
At one point, you said you're going to turn the mothers out.
Right. Right.
Tell us about turning out.
Turning out. You're supposed to turn it out. You're supposed to really do it up. Translation, I suppose, is get good grades, do well at the school, function socially and athletically, and just all around do well. But turning it out had to do with will and self-assertion and making the experience one's own. And don't go up there and piddle around and stay in the corners and act like, excuse me, I don't mean to get in the way here at your school. I mean, don't Go in there. Go in there and do it.
And not only do it on their terms, but teach them something about you, seems to be what you're saying.
Well, yeah. I mean, I accepted that that was part of the reason we were there. I think most of us did. Someone said to me that surely you couldn't have known that at 15. I think many of us assume that we were experiments. You can't walk into a room and not know that part of the reason we were there was to, you know, round out the other students' education. We had that sense of that as part of the reason we'd gone.
That as black people,
yes,
you were specimens for the education of rich white kids.
Specimens might be a little too clinical a word, but sure, we were there to help them learn about black people, yeah. That's certainly what I believed, and I don't think that's completely wrong.
My guest is Laureen Carey. Her new memoir is called Black Ice. We'll talk more after a short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Laureen Carey. Her new memoir is called Black Ice. Laureen, we were talking about what this school, St. Paul's, was about, what their expectations were about you, what your role was there. And at one point you talk, I guess you were in your last semester of your last year, you were vice president of the student body.
Yeah.
And Archibald Cox, the former Watergate prosecutor who was fired by Richard Nixon,
right,
came to see you.
Yeah.
And there was kind of it seems like there was sort of an epiphany for you, mm-hmm, and probably not for him. Why don't you just read that passage for us when you were there at St. Paul's talking with Archibald Cox?
All right. Mr. Cox thought a moment. God forbid he should go for the cross-examination. I added more. Black concerns here at school may look different, but are not really from the concerns that my parents have taught me all my life at home. I put that one in just so he'd know that I had a family. And believe me, sir, my mom and daddy did not put President Nixon into the White House. We didn't do that. Mr. Cox wrinkled his lean Yankee face into a mischievous smile. His voice whispered mock conspiracy. He leaned toward me. Do you know who Nixon hates worst of all? I shook my head. No, I had no idea. Our kind of people. My ears felt hot. I wanted to jump on the table. I wanted to go back home and forget that I'd ever come. I wanted to take him to West Philly and drop him off at the corner of 52nd and Locust, outside Fufu's Steak Emporium right by the drug dealers, leave him there without a map or a bow tie, and tell me about our kind of people. The rector gave me a look that urged caution. I fixed my face. What kind of people are those? I asked. Why the educated Northeastern establishment? He said. The rector smiled as if relieved.
The educated Northeastern establishment.
Yes.
That's you.
And I had no idea. And it was a revelation for me.
Several years later, you went back to teach at St. Paul's.
Yeah. Yes.
Then you joined the Board of Trustees.
Yes.
What kind of person are you now?
You can answer that question several ways. What kind of person are you? You can't get away from this this school. I'm an African American who's been educated at this school, who believes very strongly in giving something back where I got it.
At one point, you say, "I don't want to live in one world or the other."
Hmm. I don't know. I don't know how much it's possible. It's a current struggle. What I've said. I talked to someone about going to talk at a school, and I told him I don't want to make it sound as if I've settled this. You know, I don't have being black in America down pat. You know, I don't have it done yet. You live it a day at a time.
Do you think white and black people are any better able to talk about the fact of race and racial difference now, or maybe has it gone in the opposite direction?
Well, I don't know about that, frankly. I don't see a whole huge load of change in my own life with people I meet, no.
I guess that's the thing. In many places in the book, you are talking about the kinds of issues that many Americans, including liberal-minded Americans who think of themselves as integrationists, don't seem to talk about.
Forgive me.
Well, this question of, I remember at one point one of the students says to you, what do black men look like? And there's this awkward pause, and it's you're sorting out how to deal with that question.
Right, sure, sure. That, yeah, and I had that feeling that for a moment that it was pointless, that I was there for nothing. You know, did it all come down to nothing but this old song of the South? You know, here we are again with this old foolishness, the business about who's attracted to whom and who's better and bad. I mean, we got all of this. We've got this huge muck of mythology all woven into the fabric of America. You know, do black people do it differently? I mean, that kind of stuff.
That's coming up in the question from this girl.
Sure, it's all coming up in that question. And of course, I was no more ready to deal with that. You know, I said I wanted people to deal with me as a black person, but I didn't want to hear that at all, you know. And a lot of me just shut down right then. But that, you know, that doesn't last very long. You get lonely. You want to have people. And some of my best and most supportive friendships came from that group within the black community there that we formed.
And have most of those, that first class of black students, first few classes of black students, have they performed according to the St. Paul's expectation and according to their family's expectations?
I'm not sure. We came to St. Paul's with different expectations, and when I was there, frankly, I did not know whether we were expected to go out and be, kind of assimilate ourselves into the world of banking and finance and corporate America, or we were supposed to go out and be black entrepreneurs and start a whole kind of second tier, you know, and do that and therefore make jobs and all, or go to the community and all be social workers and doctors. I didn't know, and I talked about it. Yeah, I kept saying to myself, well, what am I going to do with this? What am I going to do with this? What can I possibly do that's worth this? I didn't know. I didn't know what the school expected. I'm not sure that they had a monolithic expectation either. But those people I interviewed, many of them are doing that, and they're doing many different sorts of things. You know, they're a prosecutor in the city of New York. Someone else is working with computers. Someone else is a hospital administrator. Someone else is in investment banking. I mean, it just spans school teacher. I mean, there's a whole range. And I needed to get that message that there's not just one way to do black. One of the things the students at St. Paul seemed to have that I envied was a sense of freedom, a sense of, wow, now what shall I do with my life? Whoa, maybe I'll go to India and study Hinduism. Whoa. And I thought to myself, how dare you? Come back here and work, you know. Or that openness that says, whoa, maybe I'll do theology, or maybe I'll stop and go do pottery. And I think it is true that as a black American, you do have a responsibility to help people that... So there is that mandate against going to be a potter off in the woods somewhere, but there is a freedom, and I hope some of us have tapped into it.
Lorene Carey, thanks for being here today.
Thank you very much.
Lorene Carey is the author of Black Ice, a new book just out, and this is Fresh Air.